world, seeing life, seeing differences, it makes you a bit different. And I love this difference, these little experiences, these little differences that make you think out of the box.
So you mean travel can be the source of gaining wisdom about different groups of people, about culture, yes, about the differences, even, yes, those differences that will hurt us or will make us sad for a second. Yes. Like, why did it happen to me? That culture shock, let's say. But this can be a source of wisdom, a place, indeed, that we can start to grow.
Yes. It's what are we taking out of it and how it's going to change me. Of course, if I let these little shocks bother me and be a negative person, then it's not very nice. But if we be a bit positive toward it and try to change ourselves for the sake of improvement, it's going to be very easy. It's going to be nice.
And when we talk about travel, you know what? I was right now thinking of this word travel. To answer my own question that why is travel so important in Islam, I was thinking that maybe travel had different concepts regarding our religion. I mean, mm-hmm, one of them is the kind of travel that we go these days. I mean, easy peasy in a place that we like it, yeah, in a, I don't know, in an interesting environment. We had the kind of travel which was hard in the past. Yes. The travel that people had to spend days on a camel to just reach one place. They had the lack of food, lack of water,
yes,
and all these problems were on their way, and still they would have done it. Or even the thing that our prophet was mentioning at his time, that we can travel for our life for the sake of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Remembering the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he went on a trip that he knew it's going to be the destination.
Yes.
It's going to be the end. But still, he went there with all the difficulties that he knew from before. See, it's really scary. Like, you know that this trip that you're going on is not going to be easy. But you still choose to continue this path.
Yes, even for the sake of growth and, yeah, for the sake of God.
Yeah, so I think these examples, these samples of our role models can show that that what we mean by travel is not the kind of thing that maybe we are all imagining right now.
Yeah, it's not the perfect vacation that sometimes we think of, but travel can be very different. It can be for very harsh reasons.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
The most important kind of trip can be our own trip towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I mean, yes, the way we are moving on His way, the way we are imagining ourselves on a path that the perfect destination, the ultimate goal is going to be reaching Him. So we are also living on a kind of trip as well.
Yes.
We are on our path towards the greatness, towards the purpose of our life. But going back to the kind of things that we can see these days, the trips that all of us are going, our listeners might be thinking, okay, if I go on a vacation and there is no spiritual benefits for me, why should I go there? I'm a Muslim. I do have responsibilities. What are my responsibilities as a Muslim, as the character of a person who is going to travel to different places? And how can I take it to my advantage?
We have in our religion that we need to have a part of our, you know, schedule,
yeah,
specified for rest, where we can let our mind be in a state of peace, far from normal chaos. And I think journey can be a very nice thing, like a short trip to somewhere, as you mentioned, free, yeah, from chaos, free from normal, you know, schedule.
So true.
Although you might love your job and all, but you need to take a break so that when you, yeah, come, right, back, you're even more energetic.
That's a kind of self-discovery.
Yes, it makes you think of yourself, oh, I could be this as well.
Right, so true. And the other thing can be the spiritual journey. I mean, the way we can use our own opportunities by traveling to even different cities as the spiritual place for improvement. I mean, I can surely learn some stuff from different culture, from different groups of society. Maybe those people in another city who are doing something, I don't know, as a kind of, mm-hmm, worship. I can do the same. Maybe they know many things that can help me improve. So they are not useless. I mean, the trips that we go to, for sure, we're going to rest and we're going to spend some time just having fun getting a little far from the work and from everything that we do face on our daily basis. But then here, this is the place that we can learn. We can go inside, we can learn things that can help us improve, even in this spiritual way.
And another type of, you know, travel we can have is toward nature. Different places that you can see beautiful part of nature, mountains, deserts, trees, forest, whatever. And also we have in Surah Al-Ankabut, verse 20, that says, travel through the land and observe how he began creation.
Wow.
It is nice that it can be one of the advantages of traveling when you look around and have a little connection with the nature and the greater connection with the creator of this nature.
Yeah, so true. So the way we're traveling does not mean that we're going to stop worshiping, that we're going to stop everything, keep them at home, and then leave. While we're on a trip, there are many things that we can see, even things that we cannot see on our own places, in our own city. Maybe we got used to seeing the beauty of nature, and we've got used to seeing the beauty of the creation of Allah. But then once we travel, our eyes are open to the new areas. And the other thing that can help us to understand the concept and the importance of traveling is traveling to break the routines. I mean, living comfort zone teaches us resilience, teaches us that not everything is going to be on the way that we planned. I don't know if you've experienced this before or not, but once it happened to me, and it taught me many lessons. Well, my brother lives in another city, and it's kind of far from us. And last year, suddenly we had to go there. I mean, he called. He had some work with my dad, and they talked. And then the decision was that we had to go there for almost like a week.
Mm-hmm.
So we went there, and it was out of my schedule. I mean, I had my hectic, busy plans for every moment. I mean, it is this hard for me that right now, if I want to plan something for tomorrow afternoon, I have to change. Yes. I have to just talk to many people to change this and that so I can manage. So see how this situation of 1 week trip could have hurt me.
Yes.
I got so sad. I kept nagging and complaining, but we had to go. Mm-hmm. And there was no other ways. So we went there, and first I was all grumpy and sad, and don't talk to me.
Annoyed.
Yeah, just leave me. I'm going to just bear this and wait for it to end. But then when we were coming back after the week, and I wasn't like that there. I mean, once I saw them, my mood changed and I got better. But when we were coming back, I was thinking of this, that if suddenly everything finishes,
mm-hmm.
I mean, to look at the darker side, what if death happens?
Mm-hmm.
Happier side, what if this kind of trip happens? How will you react, and how can it teach you the lesson? I mean, there I learned that if everything stops at 1 second, you're not going to go to work tomorrow, you're not going to see your favorite friend tomorrow,
yes.
and you have to go somewhere else, be it the other world or be it another city. So this taught me that you have to be prepared for
yes.
everything.
And you have to be ready to give up on some stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Even for short term, which for you was a short
yeah.
term. And this can be an amazing lesson if we consider the concept of death, that all these lovely things that we have built is nothing to carry with us.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
should leave it here.
So true. And this is the moment that we have to change our idea. We have to be ready for it.
Yes.
I mean, we say normally that, okay, I'm ready for death. I'm a Muslim, so I know that this is not going to be
mm-hmm.
the end. I should be well prepared. But when it happens to us, like that moment that it came to me, that travel that came to me, we will be all sad. Like, I'm not ready. I have my plans. I have my routine.
Yeah, we plan like there's not going to be any kind of interruption.
Yeah, breaking the routine can also be the other thing that will teach us many lessons regarding traveling. Also, Imam Ali alayhi salam had mentioned travel, for it provides 5 benefits: relief, earning, knowledge, companionship, and honor.
How beautiful.
See, these are great things that
yes.
Reaching even each of them can be so hard. But he's packing them all under the benefits of traveling. So in this way, by traveling, we can earn relief. We can earn, by earning, I think he means both the spiritual and the real ones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, many people travel for business,
yes.
so it can help them. With knowledge, companionship, and honor. Also companionship.
How beautiful.
Yeah, being on a train with some people, once we enter, we don't know them. And
mm-hmm.
when we are leaving, we look around and we say, oh my God, they're my close friends.
And sometimes they're not.
Yeah, sometimes,
sometimes the other side.
And there we learn that we have to be wiser.
We learn that we have to be a lot wiser. We learn that there are very crazy people out there. We need to be very, very, very careful.
So traveling is not useless. It's full of benefits.
Indeed it is.
Full of different ideas, different things, different lessons that we can learn.
Yes.
And that's probably the reason why Islam has highlighted the role of traveling for a Muslim and in their own lifestyle. So we have to have some time. We have to spend some time traveling.
Yes.
Well, with the wishes of great travels ahead of you, let's end today's episode. Until the next time, wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The earth and the heavens begin to sing. The angels celebrate the birth of a king. A king who outshines the stars of the night. A beacon of hope. You guide us with your blessings of God upon you is my prayer. The earth and the heavens begin to sing. This day we celebrate the birth of a king.
Thank you for joining us. The Hebrew media focused on the dimensions of the attack on the southern suburb of Beirut and the escalating aggression against Lebanon. It also focused on Iran and on the indictment filed against Israelis accused of spying for Iran. Meanwhile, the issue of the occupied West Bank was present in the comments of Israeli analysts, in addition to the situation in Syria. These topics will be the focus of discussion in this episode with Dr. Mohsen Saleh, president of the International Association of Political Experts, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Dr. Mohsen.
Thank you for having me.
The Israeli aggression on the southern suburb of Beirut was the subject of commentary in the Hebrew media. Amos Yedlin, former head of the military intelligence directorate in the Israeli army, affirmed that striking the southern suburb is a multidimensional message. Amos Yedlin believes that the attack that took place yesterday on the southern suburbs of Beirut is a message not only to Hezbollah, but also to the Lebanese government.
Well, what he's saying is a tautological statement, and he is not knowing what does that mean for the resistance. Resistance, of course, they are proud of having this relationship with Iran. They are proud of these leaders, that they offspring many of these leaders for the future. And in 2008, when they killed the martyr Imad Mughniyi, Sayyid Nasrallah, may peace be upon his soul, said that there are tens of thousands that they benefit from this martyrdom. And I guess now it's a symbolic, true, it's a symbolic for the resistance. They have to pay attention that it is a resistance and it is a revolution. It is an ambience that would yield into a new way of thinking, especially at this time. When you stop, make the silence, recollect and regain your power. That means the Israelis, they have had this zone before 2000, and they were broken and they were defeated. And now it will be the same. They should not give themselves this benefit or this symbolic operation.
But from the enemy side of you, what's the message that they wanted
the
to send with yesterday's escalation in the attacks?
Remind our viewers,
military actions did not stop since the ceasefire took action in South Lebanon. However, yesterday, for the first time, Southern Lebanon is targeting.
Well, it's true. They are challenging the government.
Beirut.
They are helping these people who are calling the Hezbollah and the resistance in order to disarm themselves or to disarm with the Lebanese army.
To put pressure.
But that will not work. That will not work. Since the more you increase your attacks and aggressions against Lebanon, the more the people in Lebanon, they will raise their voice in order to resist and in order to help the resistance to continue. They are weak in their mentality, the Israelis and their allies, that they don't know that the more they have pressure on the resistance, the more the people, they don't see any peace, they don't see any tranquility, they don't see any kind of negotiations, as the Lebanese president said. But the people in Lebanon, they have saved themselves by the resistance. They have worked hard for tens of years in order to regain the power in the region and in Lebanon. And they will not submit. They will not surrender.
Okay.
They have to continue. They have. It's their destiny. It's their way of thinking. It's their example, historical example. That's the cultural meaning of the resistance.
Okay.
So
staying
now,
in the same
now
context.
The Israelis, they can do nothing. Of course, they can assassinate. They can kill. They can damage. They can horrify people. But they cannot pursue. They cannot demonate the area in Lebanon or in the south.
Staying in the same context, the Hebrew media confirmed that the Israeli aggression on the southern suburb of Beirut was carried out with a U.S. approval. It stated that the United States canceled the scheduled visit of the Lebanese army commander to Washington. It's obvious from this report that Washington gave the green light to the Israelis to launch the attack that we witnessed yesterday in the southern suburb of Beirut. What are the implications of that? At times, even the Israelis believe that the Washington sponsors the Lebanese president.
Well, Washington is leading the whole expedition in Gaza and in Lebanon. And whoever thinks other than that would be mistaken. The Lebanese government, they have bet on this government in order to disarm what they say. They want a sedition. They want a fight inside Lebanon. And Tom Barrack said it clearly that we arm the Lebanese army in order to disarm Hezbollah and to have fight with its people. And
not Hezbollah, against Israel.
Not against Israel, of course. This is natural, absolute, because the United States want to dominate the region by using the force of the Israelis, because they are 1,000 shipments to the Israeli entity, and they have continued to declare that they are anti-Lebanese who are trying to fight to liberate or to say their even to raise their voice for their freedom. So let's say that the Americans are trying to do so, but the Lebanese government, they cannot do that, because the Lebanese, most of the Lebanese, 50% at least of the Lebanese people, they disagree with the government in order to find peace inside. You cannot fight inside and say we want peace. You have to keep a peaceful environment inside in order to reach a dialogue that would facilitate the way or pave the way for the government in order to make some kind of, development, try to rebuild the
They said that they canceled the visit of the army personnel, the last moment, because in the article that was present, they did not condemn Hezbollah. Do you think, Dr. Mohsen, that the Americans who encourage, as we have seen, and also support the ongoing Israeli attacks on Lebanon, might take escalatory actions in the coming days as a way to pressure the Lebanese government?
They might.
To disarm Hezbollah?
They might, but the Lebanese government cannot do more than what they are doing. They have this kind of commonalities, they have this kind of common terms with the resistance and with the leadership of Hezbollah and with the Shiites in order to keep the dignity and ownership of the people who protect it and who are embracing the government, the resistance. So let's to say, whatever the Americans and the Israelis try to force and to put pressure on the Lebanese government and on Lebanon in order to submit, and that would not work. That's useless. That will go nowhere.
Okay.
But the Lebanese resistance is still trying to keep some kind of power in order to protect itself.
Okay.
Despite
the fact that Lebanese President Dr. Mohsen showed assistance 24 hours prior to the attack that happened yesterday, assistance, and as in, he said that we are ready for negotiations.
Yeah.
And he was waiting the American response towards that.
He was waiting.
And then the attack occurred. So what's the message
the
Israel wanted to send?
And the Israeli response, because these two are trying to find a way that Lebanon would go for the Abrahamic,
accord.
Accord. But Lebanon said it clearly that we cannot go for such kind of accord before we make sure that most of the Arabs or all the Arabs have agreed or have approved on this kind of covenant, because it's a new covenant.
Yes.
They are trying to impose that on the Arabs to empower the Israelis, because the Israelis are finding themselves that they are weak. They cannot confront the region. The peoples in the region now are aware of their self-identity.
Okay. Before ending this,
the resistance is representing the peoples.
Yes, okay. Before closing this very important subject, do you think that the attack the aggressive attack that happened yesterday in southern Beirut will actually lead to an explosion of the situation and the return to war in Lebanon?
No, no, I don't think so. We're not going back to war. The Lebanese government is aware of these plots against Lebanon, and the president's speech in Tir, in Sur, that has many indications and connotations in order to say, well, we are in Lebanon, in the south and the north, in Beirut, in the capital, wherever we are.
Okay.
We are trying to unite ourselves in order to face the problems we have.
Okay.
It's not a problem of occupation only. It's a problem of continuing the march for state, to make state. State. We don't have state. We have to make state.
I have to move on to the third subject for today. Netanyahu is setting foot on occupied areas in southern Syria. It's still a focus of Hebrew media, particularly regarding the meanings and messages that Netanyahu sent. Is Israel's primary objective behind occupying Syria is to prevent the expansion of a Turkish influence?
Not only the Turkish influence.
Because that's the last statement also that the
commentator highlighted. That's true, but the Arab influence in Syria and the Iranian and the Russians and the people who think, the Israelis think that they are anti-Israel or anti-Americans. So the Israelis, well, here in Lebanon they should consider that what's happening in Syria, that in spite of all these facilitations for the Israelis army in South Syria, they are still continuing in order to have aggressions in all Syria. And that's why the Lebanese and the Syrians should combine their efforts in order to confront, to try to combat, even to combat the Israeli greediness for more occupation or for more invasion in Syria and in Lebanon. Here we are on the crossroad. Mm-hmm. If we obey the American and the Israeli strategy for the region, that means there are no Arabs.
Okay, we
there
remain
is
in
no
Syria.
Palestine.
Okay, we remain in Syria, where the Hebrew media reflected an atmosphere of Israeli discontent over what they called the al-Julani's attempts to establish a Russian and Turkish security presence in Syria to protect him and stabilize his rule. What problem would Israel have with an enhanced Russian presence in Syria?
Well, first of all, the Israelis have a kind of relationship with the Russians and even with the Turks. But both or all of them, they should understand that there are Syrians there in South Syria. And in Lebanon, there are Lebanese in South Lebanon. There is no right in any law, in the international law, for the Israelis to occupy here or there, in South Syria or in South Lebanon.
Yes.
Whatever they do, the Israelis are really playing in that playground in Syria, where there are no Syrian forces in Golan or in Quneitra or in South, or in Suwayda even, or in Daraa. So the Israelis are playing there, are making a new game in order to rule Syria, all Syria. And they want to have negotiations with the Russians and the Turks in order to have a part or in charge in the Syrian political
scene. But why would al-Julani want to establish a Russian existence or a Turkish influence or a presence inside Syria at times that he visited Washington and he was aiming to gain the protection of Washington? Do you think that that was a failure? That's why he's looking for different regional countries to protect him against any Israeli threat, or he doesn't care about that?
Well, the Syrians want to have a kind of independence, but Julani knows that he was brought to the authority in Syria by the help of the Turks and the Americans and the Israelis.
Okay.
So that's why they are going in this manner. The Russians, because of their influence in the international arena, now the Russians, they came back and they have interests in Syria, in the shore, or in South Syria. Mm-hmm. The Israelis, they have no problem in in the Russian existence or military existence in Syria, but on one condition that won't prevent the Israelis from influencing or executing their political scene in Syria and will have no enemy in Syria.
Okay, a growing number of indictments are being issued in the Israeli entity against Israelis accused of spying for Iran. The latest development is what the Hebrew media revealed about the arrest of a soldier working in one of Israel's most important military bases on charges of spying for Iran. How damaging are such cases to the Israelis?
Well, since they are talking about this this case, spying against what they call their state, well, that will penetrate their security zone in order to give some information, and the Iranians were able to get some information about many sites, nuclear or military or intelligence or even scientific or military spots. So we are talking about the exchanging the role in trying to spy against each other. Well, the Israelis have had a lot of these cases in Iran. And the Iranians, I guess, they have not only the right, but they have to go into spying against the Israelis.
Okay, this topic, actually, Dr. Mohsen, meanwhile, was also raised by Israeli commentators on social media.
Rui, it's astonishing how many Israelis are willing to sell their country to Iran for a few thousand shekels. Every week, a new spy is discovered. This is frightening. Nitzan, Israel has lost its intelligence superiority. Today, Iran can penetrate us easily. Zirab, Smotrich suggests executing the Jews who worked for Iran. I have a question. Does this also apply to the Jews who worked for Qatar?
Dr. Mohsen, unfortunately, our time is up. You're the president of International Association of Political Experts. Thank you very much for joining us in today's episode.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Back to Reality. Well, this is Asma once more. I have the honor to be your host in this program. And I have two very dear guests, Brother Liaghat and Sister Zainab. And I'm sure that your company is going to be so enjoyable and we're going to have a lot of insights to be sharing with each other. So just like always, we have this ritual of the guests presenting themselves for the audience who have just joined us. Please give us a very brief introduction about yourself. And let's start with Sister Zainab, ladies first.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm Turfatlan Zainab Askari. I actually hail from India, but I have been living in Iran for some 10 years now. I studied science, then linguistics, and then Hausa, so I'm a multidisciplinary student.
Which makes you perfect for this program. And then you, Brother Liaghat?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm Muhammad Liaghat Abbas from India. I've done my bachelor's in Islamic history and currently I'm about to finish my master's in psychology.
Very good. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming here.
Thank you.
So, since the topic of procrastination is a very interesting topic, we decided to get into another episode of procrastination because there are many people who are just obsessed with this issue and they're suffering from it. It's just about the fact that you create an illusion in your mind in a way that it just does not let you get into it.
Yeah.
But if you do it, the process is going to be pretty much easier.
you have to get a college degree to be successful in life. Like, the definition of success in itself is wrong, as we also discussed in the previous episode. Like, we have to redefine the definition of success. And then they tell us, like, okay, pay matters, the incentives matters, but the whether you are enjoying the job or not, it does not matter much. While as I think today, it's not the world, we are not living in a world today wherein, like, as long as you're not enjoying the job, you can do it. So these are some outdated social norms that we are adhering to because of that, I don't know, competition thing. And that's how other things come in, like we start comparing, we start competing, and we start holding ourselves back.
Yeah. There are many people who believe that action is the antidote to anxiety. And I think that's very true. Like, you see, as a procrastinator myself, I know this, but sometimes I cannot act accordingly. So this is very paradoxical. How can I just know something, be sure of it, and yet not being able to apply it?
This happens with a lot of us. And I think, example, I'll take a very simple example. The Salat al-Yawmiyya, which is the daily prayers.
Right.
So you know that you have to pray on time. Like Salat, in that is prayers in its first place, carries a lot of rewards.
Mm-hmm.
But still, a person normally kind of procrastinates, and he's like, oh, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us a lot of time, like 5 hours for Zohar to get Qadha. So
yeah.
I can still pray. Until the time it gets Qaza, probably like a few minutes. So that is when it's because of the deadline. Over here,
you should say that Persian quote to yourself, like, namaz nagu kar daram, bekar begu namaz daram. Do not say to your namaz, I have some other work right now.
Mm-hmm.
Say to your work, rather, I have salat right now.
Indeed. But the thing is, in practical world, this doesn't happen. Like, how many times do we say to our prayer, oh, I have work,
especially
rather than saying...
Especially when I'm at work.
Yeah, like at workplace, in schools, in colleges, like in universities, this doesn't happen. It's normally...
But it should happen. I would say, like, I know Imam Raza al-Islam was writing something one day. And there could be nothing more important document than the Imam writing himself, right? But the moment he hears the azan, he leaves the things aside and he starts praying. So I don't think our works, our jobs are anything.
The Ahlul Bayt, they say the Ahlul Bayt are different.
Yeah. No,
why are you bringing Ahlul Bayt to Allah?
They are, I do agree, but they are role models, I guess. They were in the human form to show us that you can. As a human, you can. They were not made of supernatural
product. Yeah,
you
can, but it's very difficult. They saw the good and bad in their true essence.
Well, I think
but
psychology
I, as a human
says
being,
that the moment you say to yourself, it is difficult, you're already giving a 50% break. So I think we have to be very optimistic in this regard.
Yeah, so now we're getting into some very interesting points. We have to go for a break before we come back and see what are the other factors that actually get us into procrastination. What are the other entrapments that get us into this point of procrastination?
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Overthinking and anxiety both create a sort of predicament, an obstacle into the way of doing something rightly, and not rightly, just getting to do something. Because I do believe that the first step is the most important step, because if you get into there, then the whole story is going to be solved little by little, and you would get, just as what brother said, it would turn into a psychological game. Like, you would look for some rewards, like every day, even if you do a part of the task that you have to do, then you would feel like this was the reward of today. And then you would be actually passionate about doing more, and then you would have driving force for doing much more of your task. Yet, there are those people who still are stuck up in that procrastination mode, which we were just talking about. Yes, you're listening to Back to Reality. Sister Zainab and Brother Liaghat are with us, and we're talking about What are the things that get us into the trap of procrastination, and what are the things that hold me back from doing what I really am capable of doing? So maybe in my fate it has been written that I can be the, for example, inventor of something, but I won't turn into that inventor just because I was afraid of the journey, just because I was procrastinating all the time, just because I was too scared of leaving my comfort zone. So let's discuss this a bit deeper.
Yeah, not getting out of your comfort zone, to be stuck in your comfort zone. And I think people are stuck in the comfort zone because they are afraid, because of the fear, like fear of failures. But I think failures are the greatest gifts. Failures are, as we say, steps to success. I remember for the first time I failed in life. And I called my friends and I learned that they also failed. So we did a failure party, literally, because we
welcome to the club.
Yeah. We literally did a failure party. We gathered together and we said, like, this is not the end of the day.
And that was deconstruction, reading failure in a different way.
Yes. So we don't take always things as slogans. Like many people do.
I know. You're a woman of your words. But I mean, like, I'm talking about me, myself, as in the real world.
You know, looking at it as an ultimate way to learn, to grow. Like, if we are holding ourselves back because we are nervous about messing up things, or we will not go much far. But I think these failures are integral part of our every great success story. Like, I look at the Einstein. He was thrown out of the school, and the school gave a letter to his mother that he's a mad guy. And
He's dumb.
He's mad.
Thomas Alva Edison as well.
You should take him to some asylum or something. And then when she reads it loud in front of her son, she reads the opposite of what they said. Yeah, she says, yeah. They're saying, like, we don't have exceptional teachers to teach your genius son. And he ended up becoming a genius. So
exceptional.
I would say, like, the way you said, we have sometimes bad people around us who look down upon us. Sometimes it's very important for us to be surrounded by good people who don't look down upon you.
Surrounding ourselves with good people is something which the beautiful religion of Islam also recommends us. And getting away from the bad people is something, yeah, I would say, when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in the Holy Quran, like, so get away from yourself, from the fawahish, or from the bad things, basically, or do not get close even to the fawahish, is because of this reason. Because when a person gets closer to the fawahish or the bad things, he would eventually commit them, like,
exactly.
Basically.
And I've heard something from from a scholar who was actually talking about this that we're discussing right now, and he said something very beautiful. He said that it's not about the bad people or the bad thing. It's about you losing that sensor, losing that sense of being sensitive towards that bad or good thing.
Amazing. You are desensitized.
Like, you would, yeah, exactly. You would lose that sense of, okay, this is bad.
Yeah.
And indeed. Then you would be just shocked when people tell you this is bad. You wouldn't even realize that this is bad, because you have lost already your sense of bad.
This is what happens
bad.
With many of people, like many of the people who are there. They say you can't do anything, you are worthy of nothing, just like you have said.
Exactly.
And this person himself will also think the same. I'm not worthy of this work, maybe. And because of this very reason, in tarbiyah, like in nurturing, in Islamic upbringing, they say, do not tambih, do not degrade your child because of whatever you have seen, like because of the inability to act. Maybe today he's unable to act. Maybe today she's unable to do certain work. But
exactly.
Tomorrow. No, like the person can be the opposite, like because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the one who's
just
going to give
just give her the way,
strength.
Just give them your children or your friends maybe, or the people that are around, maybe your colleagues, because we have effect on other people and we degrade this effect. We feel like it's not important, while it is, it really is.
And I think if we give them a good push, like being friends, parents, brother, sister, whatever, if we give them a good push or speak to them in a good manner, like, okay, what are your accomplishments, or what do you want to accomplish, example. And the person says, I want to do this, I want to do that, example, my aim is this, I want to become a pilot, example, whatever. Then it's very important that the friend or parent or brother,
provide
sister, they give them a grounds, provide them the grounds, they give them the good upliftment and encourage them to enter the field. Otherwise, is a thing. It's like the person is worthy and having the potential to become such a person in future. But right now, you are one of the reasons for him to stop from reaching his goal.
Okay.
So it's not just the procrastination of the person. And wallahi, like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will ask us on the day of judgment about wrong suggestions. Why on that particular day? Why have you given this suggestion to that person? I have created him.
Particular, actually, in here we have to add this particular attention to those people who have got media in their hand and they're just suggesting people stuff that they shouldn't, sharing everything so recklessly. I guess this part is directly devoted to you.
I think the things that you are discussing right now, it adds two more points that adds to the procrastination. Is it's blaming. Like, for example, the brother said, like, we should have people set up in our lives who push us up, who uplift us. But sometimes we, when we see someone else is being uplifted and I was not, we start playing that blame game. Okay, I was not like this because I did not have that kind of grounds and this. So this blaming is only a, you know, it's just a lazy way of making sense of failures and mistakes.
All of these strategies actually are defense mechanisms,
right,
that we use to give them to ourselves as pretext,
right,
to justify ourselves. Remember that, I was just reading it right now, that it said that you become the average of the five people you spend the most time with. So, which means definitely what all we have been talking up until now, that be aware of the people that you're surrounded with,
mm-hmm,
because they are going to have a great impact on who you are in future.
Right.
And speaking of, if I want to sum it all up, anxiety, fear, perfection, everything that you call it, is just, again, a sort of defense mechanism that you don't want to leave your safe zone and you don't want to get out of that comfort zone that you have it in your mind. While it is not comfort, I know, it's anxiety zone, but you prefer to be there than to have new plans, to take actions, to take new steps, which actually is going to be changed if you just look at it this way, that your action is going to be a remedy to all the anxieties that you have. Once you start getting into that direction, everything is going to be a lot more easier. So thank you, brother, and thank you, sister. And thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. This was all for today's episode of Back to Reality. Until another Back to Reality. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabb. Let the ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi. Let the ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again. Allah Allah, Allah Allah, Allah Allah,
Ya Rabbi,
Allah Allah,
Ya Rabbi,
Allah Allah, Allah.
There's a light that still shines from the faces of those near. In the night they will stand and cry in hope and in fear. Nothing in the world can ever turn their hearts away from the calm of surrender they find when they say,
is known for its four-season climate and the climatic variety in each of its regions. This time, the lavender fields of North Khorasan province have invited us so that we could discover a part of natural beauties in northeastern Iran.
The land of a thousand colors, with a wild and vibrant nature, where kings and poets have been inspired by its beauties throughout the ages. A place where fountains keep the rivers flowing like the never-ending tales of Shahrazad in the 1,000 Nights and a Night.
From some of the most arid deserts in the world, the habitat of the Iranian cheetah, to the greenest forests, pastures, and valleys, North Khorasan has it all. Here at the Baba Aman Forest Park, the combination of rivers, waterfalls, and the umbrella of sycamore trees have all created one of the most popular summer hideouts for the people in the region.
There are a number of forest parks in North Khorasan, and Baba Aman is one of the popular ones. In spring and summer, Baba Aman hosts the largest number of visitors. At first sight, the place resembles an oasis. What greets you here upon your arrival is the cool, gentle breeze that touches your face. The symphony of the flowing river and the terraced ponds in the middle of the park complete this good feeling. But our trip to North Khorasan is not all about nature. In this amazing region of Iran, there is a little town which could be considered unique, at least in Iran and its surrounding countries. The exceptional feature of this place unveils itself after a short drive in the town's only boulevard.
We have come to a little town in northeast Iran, a town with only 12,000 inhabitants. What is interesting about it is that it has more than 170 shops that only sell dried nuts and dried snacks, such as kashk. It's a combination of dried curd and herbs and spices. Wow. It's kind of hard, but it's so tasty. Let's get inside and have a look.
Welcome to Farooj, the region's trade hub for dried nuts, trail mixes, and you name it.
One of the things that makes North Khorasan exceptionally beautiful is its untouched natural environment. Many believe that this region could be one of the main destinations for ecotourists in the near future. A few kilometers from the city of Shirvan, a village known as Gelian testifies to this fact.
We head towards a hidden paradise in Iran's northeast. Gelian, also known as Golian, is one of the 365 outstanding tourist villages of Iran. With a population of no more than 700, the inhabitants of this picturesque mountainous area are mainly engaged in farming and animal husbandry. Gelian is situated in a valley. The terraced structure of the village and its adobe buildings, along with very tall trees, are only some of the interesting features of this place. Some people believe that if you're born in Iran and spend an entire lifetime traveling across this country, you still wouldn't be able to see all the beauties of this ancient land. This may be true, but seeing at least a part of beautiful Iran would still be worth it. Amir Mehdi Kazemi for Iran.
Good evening to all our listeners. This is Iran Radio. Very nice to have you with us. We'll start this hour's programs with our news bulletin. They will be followed by today's special daily mix format program that deals with various Islamic and Iranian occasions. Our radio productions feature will be next. And our final program this hour is Leader's Speech, presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches of the Honorable Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei. Stay with us for this hour.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel continues to violate the Gaza ceasefire agreement, launching more deadly attacks in the Palestinian territory. Afghanistan says at least 9 children and a woman have been killed in attacks by Pakistani forces in the Khosh province. And finally, a new survey in the U.S. shows the majority of Latinos reject Trump's approach to immigration and are dissatisfied with how they are treated in the country. Hello and welcome, everyone.